Ministers met earlier to discuss coordinating a response to the arrest of Russian opposition figure Alexei Navalny and those protests that took place over the weekend that saw thousands arrested in Russia. As ministers made their way into the meeting, German Foreign Minister Heiko Maas called for the immediate release of Navalny. This meeting comes just days after thousands were arrested for taking part in an unauthorized demonstration against the arrest of the Kremlin critic. Now authorities warned against such illegal gatherings, citing the coronavirus pandemic. Four people charged with criminal damage over the toppling of the statue of slave trader Edward Colston in Bristol in the southwest of England have denied all charges against them. The bronze statue of the 17th century merchant was pulled from its plinth and pushed into the Bristol harbour following Black Lives Matter protests on June the 7th last year. Appearing in person at Bristol Magistrates Court this morning, all individuals entered not guilty pleas and asked for their case to be tried by a jury. The case will now be heard at Bristol Crown Court on the 8th of February. Our Ahmed Caballo was at the hearing earlier and sent us this update.
So in the city of Bristol, where four men have been accused of taking a statue of the controversial slave trader Edward Colston, dragging him through the city of Bristol and dumping him in the harbour. Now, they pleaded not guilty. They decided for the case not to be heard in the Bristol Magistrates Court, but instead in the Bristol Crown Court for their fate to be decided by a jury of their peers. Now, we can't say too much about the court case due to court rulings and court law here in the UK, but what we can talk about is the circumstances which led to the controversial statue being toppled. Now, it was following the death of George Floyd, which sparked Black Lives Matter protesters around the world to rise up and demand racial equity and racial justice and an end to police brutality. And it sparked a conversation about history, about monuments and about statues. Now, British Home Secretary Priti Patel and British Prime Minister Boris Johnson both condemned the move at the time and called it thuggery and vandalism. And British Prime Minister Boris Johnson said you cannot rewrite British history by taking down statues. But mixed feelings about the move, with many people on social media applauding the actions and calling the men and those involved heroes for taking this decisive action. Now, the court case has been adjourned until February. It will still be taken under COVID regulations. Today at the court, four people were arrested for breaking COVID regulations, supporters of what's now been dubbed the Colston Four. They were arrested. Many predict there'll still be a national lockdown, and many predict that many people that support these men will not be able to attend the court apart from the press and those that have a reason to be there.
This is European News Bulletin broadcast by IRIB English Radio. In this program, we covered the most recent developments all over Europe. You can listen to this program on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Saturday.
Robert Inlakesh, before we get into the International Day of Action for Yemen, you bring us some other developments.
Yes, unfortunately, another slap in the face for the Palestinians came yesterday when the United Arab Emirates cabinet approved the establishment of its embassy in Tel Aviv. That's for the Israeli regime, following what was branded as the Abraham Accords normalization deals between Arab regimes and Israel. This, in of itself, will pave the way for further relations with the Zionist entity. And on top of this as well, many people are talking about the fact that the main key factor here we have to focus on is the trade relationship, because there's a very interesting development which began, and more is being revealed about it now. This started in November of last year when they discussed using a pipeline which was in the days of the Shah, before his toppling, was going to be used between Israel and Iran. This, of course, has been seized by Israel, and they're claiming that this will be used between the United Arab Emirates and Israel. And on top of that, paving the way for what is going to be known as the new Hejaz Railway. And this will be a trade route which would essentially run through Saudi Arabia. And this will bring us on to our next story when we go into this. But this will essentially mean negating the means for the justifications, really, behind the tables for the Saudi coalition war on Yemen.
Indeed. Social media has reacted to this, I'm sure.
The first comment we've got here on this, slamming the embassy move into Tel Aviv, says once the UAE normalized its relations with the Israeli occupation, it became a partner with this apartheid entity and complicit in its brutal crimes against the innocent Palestinians. But another one here as well who says Arab regimes must be ashamed for their ties with apartheid Israel. Shame on everyone who accepts the agreement with killers and criminals. The support of the non-existent peace process is used in order to for the public to normalize the genocide committed by Israel against Palestinians.
Strong words there. And you mentioned Yemen. There's a push today to make it an international day of action. Just set the scene for us, Robert.
Of course, the conflict inside of Yemen has caused the massive loss of human life that we've seen there, hundreds of thousands of people killed by the fighting inside of Yemen. We've got a situation where 12,000 people are currently, according to the UN, on the verge of starvation. According to the World Economic Forum, 2 million children are enduring starvation at this moment. And what we've seen now is that the Saudis, who are having pressure applied to them by the Biden administration at this moment, and this is a story we've pulled up before in order to open this segment, have sort of pleaded to the U.S. administration to remember their common interests in Yemen. And this links back to the other story. And this was to do with the Saudis getting access to the west of Yemen in order to negate the Strait of Hormuz and essentially cut out Iran of course, these key trade routes and get access to another trade routes via the west of Yemen. And of course, a lot of people are saying now that the Saudis, due to having this pressure placed upon them, especially with Biden saying he's going to end the support for the Saudi-led coalition, that the Saudis have two options: either normalization with Israel and the allowing of the new Hejaz Railway and these trade routes to be established, or to try and duke it out inside of Yemen and try and win this war, which they essentially had said that they would complete in a few months, which has dragged on 5 years now.
Indeed, a loss of life on all sides, and brutal, extremely brutal, women, men, children, staff dying dead. Online reactions to this one now.
First we've got here says, yeah, all just shameless common interests indeed. Their common interests are never caring about the incineration of innocent lives and how many people died because of their bombs. Their common interests are Yemeni children's deaths via hunger. And another one here as well who says, this unjust U.S. aggression against the children of Yemen is from pain and hunger. Injustice for more than 6 years is considered a crime and shame against humanity in front of the hypocritical world as a whole. And then we have hashtag Day of Action for Yemen, which many people are tweeting out today.
And we take it further in the next segment. Robert Imakesh, thank you. Now to some other news unrelated, because more than 300 global anti-war and humanitarian organizations have signed a statement calling for an end to the Saudi-led war against Yemen. Now, that statement called for an international day of action, as we've just mentioned there, taking place today and just days after U.S. President Joe Biden's inauguration. It pointed to the Saudi-led bombing and the nationwide blockade. This has killed tens of thousands of Yemenis, men, women and children, while also raising fears of famine and the spread of COVID. My colleague Robert Carter has been following this intensely. And Rob, tons of support being expressed for Yemen online. But will this be a force of change?
Well, that is, of course, the big hope that we all have. Of course, U.S. presidents in the past haven't historically proven that they're reliable to do what's right. especially when it comes to when the US is profiteering from foreign conflict, which the US has been doing for years in Yemen. But the fact of the matter is, we know that Biden has promised in the lead up to his presidency to pull out of the Yemen war, to pull US support from the Saudi coalition, which is, you know, essentially engaged in war crimes in Yemen. Also, of course, there is reports that Joe Biden's foreign policy advisory team disagreed with the Ansarullah terrorism designation, which of course has created great alarm by the many activists and human rights groups that have been focusing on Yemen for so many years. So obviously the ball is in his court, and I think that this online pressure will hopefully keep it in the public eye during a period when obviously decisions have to be made. So I think obviously it's a very encouraging sign that Yemen is in the headlines, and that so much work has been made on social media to really keep the pressure on Biden to make him play that ball. He has to make a change, and millions of Yemenis' lives are in his hands now. So time for the US to make a change, and it's only through continued pressure that we can hope that that will be forced through.
And briefly on this one, Robert, what will happen if this designation is not removed and if Biden continues the path that was set by his predecessor?
Well, of course, they have warned of a new famine, which could be the worst famine that the country's seen for decades. Also, the peace process is likely to completely fail. It hasn't been very successful so far, but a total failure will mean that the Yemenis will have no alternative but to seek a win through decisive military action, and that means more retaliatory strikes, perhaps further destabilization in the Red Sea area. Yemen's foreign minister promised just a few days ago that Yemen is strong enough to change the whole scenario in the situation in Yemen, but they're holding back because they're hoping that peace will win. So it's, again, it's in Biden's hands. Does he want to end the war now and remember that the US is the ones greenlighting Saudi aggression in Yemen, or does he want to see an escalation, a military escalation? That's the reality. We've heard it from the foreign minister. It's up to Biden to make the choice.
Indeed, Robert Carter, thank you. Anti-lockdown rioters have started fires and thrown stones at police in the Dutch city of Eindhoven. Officers responded with tear gas and water cannons, arresting at least 30 people during the unrest in the southern city. The Netherlands has been in tough lockdown since mid-December, and that situation is due to continue until at least the 9th of February. Supporters of the anti-immigrant group Pegida were thought to be amongst the demonstrators. Trains to and from the city centre were halted, and local media reported plundering at the station. There were no immediate reports of injuries. Richard Sedan, one of these days I would love to talk to you and you bring me the exclusive news that racial harmony has broken out and there is prejudice no more, but that's not going to be today, is it?
Not today, Amina, but I certainly look forward to that day. Today we need to talk about a viral video by a man called Jake Henderson, which has gone viral for all the wrong reasons. It's a racist tirade directed at the UK Home Secretary, Priti Patel.
That, Richard, was the censored version, the version we could play. He said what he thought, right?
Pretty shocking stuff. I mean, really, beyond the usual condemnations, I just want to raise a couple of questions, really. If this man was from a different community, say a black or Muslim community, about toughening up on immigration, rush to say Henderson was in a minority, which of course we hope he is, but would people be rushing to say the same if Henderson was black or Muslim or from a different background? Just posing the question there, Amina.
All right, the online reaction has been such a firestorm, we can't even put it all up on there, but just give me one or two of your favourites.
Sure, I'll give you one of the tweets here, a reaction from Vets, who says, the smugness of Jake Henderson and the sheer confidence he had in posting such a video beckons all to question the audience he was able to spread hateful messages to and how long he was getting away with being a bold racist. And there's many comments like this, Amina, online.
And the worst thing there, I think, for somebody like Priti Patel, who is doing the bidding of men like Jake Henderson, Her nationality is still a barrier, not her policies. And your other story, you go across the Atlantic for this one, Richard?
Sure. So there's more conversations and reactions to the Capitol riots in the US in Washington in January. And I think the interesting thing now is that the FBI, would you believe, are actually discussing and debating whether or not to charge some of the 800 or so people involved in this attack on the Capitol. And I think in some ways, the very fact that there's a question mark about whether to charge some of these suspected white supremacists in many ways tells you all you need to know about racism in America and the priority of dealing with it. Of course, some of the other things we've learned in recent days is these weren't simply, if you like, kind of redneck hillbillies espousing these views. We've heard that there were lawyers, firefighters, police officers present. And of course, we're not really hearing much from the political class in terms of dealing with this problem. You know, this moment might have passed, but racism and, you know, the kind of Trumpism, if
that
you like,
has not really gone away. All right, give me your favorite two on this one.
Absolutely. Let's go to Beverly, first of all, who says rioters who entered the Capitol building may not be charged if they didn't engage in violence. Just like I tweeted yesterday, nothing, a slap on the wrist, white privilege, this is America. And Pedazzo says the National Guard is going to remain deployed in the Capitol because intelligence agencies are concerned that these white supremacists are going to try and attack again, Amina. So the problem has very much not gone away, and it's not relinquished with the election of Joe Biden.
It definitely not. It hasn't, Richard. Thank you so much. And that is where we leave you for this evening's broadcast. Thanks. Stay safe.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are and wherever you are listening to us.
The keys of life.
Aysel Jawadi talks about the various keys of life and has brought about this book to be a companion for the very famous Mafatih al-Jinan, where one is a tool or the keys for paradise, and this book, of course, are the keys of life.
The Keys of Life, a program designed to tell you that what Islam gives you will help get you home with joy and faithfulness. So, well, listen to
The Keys of Life.
The world is a very, very big house. Many people living in many rooms. We must open all the doors up. We must unlock them all today. Throw all the keys away.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين. My name is Sheikh Zayd Al-Salami. We're talking about how we are able to deal with ourselves and the importance of making sure that we take care of our body, our spirit, our soul. And of course, just reminding you that we're on part one of the book, which is how to deal with yourself. And of course, then we go on to, inshallah, later on into part two, how you deal with others, how to deal with others. And so when we're talking about making sure that you are not lazy, when making sure that you give your body a rest, making sure that you are observing all of the important things that would bring about a healthy kind of lifestyle, you know, continuing on from what we discussed in the previous episode, Ayatollah Jawadi Amuli goes into talking about preventing of sickness. And he divides it into two kinds. One is the material, physical side of prevention, and the other is the mental, spiritual side. But without doubt, we know that they're both intertwined with each other. We know that in Islam, you know, there are so many things that are a combination of both. You know, an example for this, which is exactly what it is that Sheikh Jawadi Amuli starts off with, by saying that, you know, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala will prevent a person from being inflicted with a sickness by the paying of charity and sadaqah. You know, and a lot of this, you know, does bring about that sense that we understand that there is always going to be the ghaibi side of how we are able to deal with our physical and mental health at the same time. And this combination is also very, very important. And it's also something unique about our religion, Islam, you know, that it's telling us that, well, look, by the way, you know, if you do this particular thing, which is a material kind of practice, it's something that you're doing physically, it's going to lead you to this kind of spiritual, for example, or mental sickness. And, you know, let me give an example of this, where it says, of course, let me read that hadith first of all from Rasulullah. Inna Allah la ilaha illahu la yadfa'u bis sadaqatil da'. That Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala will repel an illness by the paying of or the giving of charity. So what are the means of preventing sickness and illness? You know, let's go through the different areas of what Ayatollah Jawadi Amuli mentions as far as these kind of methodologies are concerned.
Ayatollah Jawadi Amuli, the author of the book Mafatihul Hayat, The Keys of Life. This book, Mafatih, ought to be in two volumes. One volume, the present volume, Mafatihul Janan, is on the level of the lofty rewards for praying, fasting, etc. But the book lacks its second volume, which ought to be on subjects like the lofty rewards for planting a tree. Imam has mentioned both of these subjects. The very Imam, who has stressed out the reward for praying, has also highlighted the reward for planting a tree. There are generous amounts of reward for protecting the environment. When growing wheat, take some in your hand and say these prayers. These are what the very Imam has mentioned. We lack this second volume in Islamic world.
An example from the Holy Prophet. He says, لا يبيتن أحدكم ويده غمرة. That nobody should sleep while their hands have dirt on them, while their hands are dirty, while their hands are oily. And, well, that's the kind of Farsi translation that Sheikh Jawadi used, saying oily or dirty. فَإِن فَعَلَ فَأَصَابُهُ الْلَمَمُ الشَّيْطَانِ فَلَا يَلُومَنَّ إِلَّا نَفْسَهُ. And if this was to happen, if he or she were to go to sleep with being dirty, with dirty hands, with oily hands, and some kind of infliction from the shaitan, some kind of shaitani kind of interference happens to them, then they should not blame anyone other than themselves. We understand that in Islam, one of the sunnahs of Islam is you doing wudu before you go to sleep. We've mentioned that anytime you do go to sleep, you should go to the bathroom and relieve yourself. It's one of the sunnahs of Islam. You know, that's all to do with cleanliness. It's all to do with hygiene. And in many cases, there is a correlation between relating dirtiness to shaitan and cleanliness to something angelic. You know, we are going to explain, you know, that whole hadith of al-nadhafatu min al-iman. But this kind of simple explanation that tells us, for example, how we are able to avoid sicknesses. So cleanliness is one thing, and staying away from any kind of dirt or dirtiness is one way of prevention. Another way, according to many, many ahadith, is to minimize your food intake, not to eat too much. But qillatu ta'am is a way of you avoiding any sicknesses. And this is exactly why Imam Ali alayhi salam, he says, قِلَّةُ الْأَكْلِ يَمْنَعُ كَثِيرًا مِنْ أَعْلَالِ الْجِسْمِ, that minimizing your eating will prevent many, many of your physical illnesses. Of course, you know, that's very clear. You know, even, you know, physicians speak about that, doctors speak about that, specialists speak about that, nutritionists speak about that. And that's why when we're talking about all of these things, we need to remember all the time that we're talking about seeing specialists, we're talking about consulting with qualified experts in this field, dietists and nutritionists and specialists in food and things like that. You know, we need to always remember that doctors are always going to give us the right advice, the correct advice. As long as it all falls in line with what it is that our religion, Islam, is also encouraging us according to the authentic traditions, by the way. And that's why, you know, we have, for example, some ahadith from Ahlul Bayt alayhim salam that say that you need to always make sure that you are consulting with specialists in the field. Walhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen, wa salatu wa salamu ala Sayyidina Muhammad wa alihi tahirin.
Driving past, walking fast to the field of dreams, hear the children scream.
There was The Keys of Life by Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran, IRIB English Radio.
Every corner represents a different image in my mind. A momentary emotion, space spent in time, in time. Memories fade like a dusty window pane, and you can't see your past no more. The only thing that remains is that feeling of warmth in your heart that will always be there, be there.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
Equipped with U.S.-manufactured littoral combat ships, the Saudis have been able to blockade air and seaports that are vital to feeding the most populated part of Yemen, the northern area where 80% of the population lives, says Katie Kelly Ryder in an article published under the heading, About Suffering, a Massacre of the Innocents in Yemen. Stay tuned for the details, please. In 1565, Peter Bruegel the Elder created The Massacre of the Innocents, a provocative masterpiece of religious art. The painting reworks a biblical narrative about King Herod's order to slaughter all newborn boys in Bethlehem for fear that a Messiah had been born there. Bruegel's painting situates the atrocity in a contemporary setting, a 16th century Flemish village under attack by heavily armed soldiers. Depicting multiple episodes of gruesome brutality, Bruegel conveys the terror and grief inflicted on trapped villagers who cannot protect their children. Uncomfortable with the images of child slaughter, the Holy Roman Emperor Rudolf II, after acquiring the painting, ordered another reworking. The slaughtered babies were painted over with images such as bundles of food or small animals, making the scene appear to be one of plunder rather than massacre. Were Bruegel's anti-war theme updated to convey images of child slaughter today, a remote Yemeni village could be the focus. Soldiers performing the slaughter wouldn't arrive on horseback. Today, they often are Saudi pilots trained to fly US-made warplanes over civilian locales and then launch laser-guided missiles sold by Raytheon, Boeing, and Lockheed Martin to disembowel, decapitate, maim, or kill anyone in the path of the blast and exploding shards. For more than 5 years, Yemenis have faced near-famine conditions while enduring a naval blockade and routine aerial bombardment. The United Nations estimates the war has already caused 233,000 deaths, including 131,000 deaths from indirect causes such as lack of food, health services, and infrastructure. The systematic destruction of farms, fisheries, roads, sewage and sanitation plants, and healthcare facilities has wrought further suffering. Yemen is resource-rich, but famine continues to stalk the country, the UN reports. Two-thirds of Yemenis are hungry and fully half do not know when they will eat next. 25% of the population suffers from moderate to severe malnutrition. That includes more than 2 million children. Equipped with U.S.-manufactured littoral combat ships, the Saudis have been able to blockade air and seaports that are vital to feeding the most populated parts of Yemen, the northern area where 80% of the population lives. Many are children who must never be held accountable for political deeds. The United States is supplying devastating weaponry and diplomatic support to the Saudi-led coalition, while additionally launching its own selective aerial attacks. Meanwhile, the U.S., like Saudi Arabia and the UAE, has cut back on its contributions to humanitarian relief. This severely affects the coping capacity of international donors. "90% of Yemen's food is imported, and even humanitarian waivers will not allow commercial imports, essentially cutting off food for the entire country. U.S. leaders and much of the mainstream media responded vigorously to the shocking insurrection at the U.S. Capitol and the tragic loss of multiple lives as it occurred. It is difficult to understand why the Trump administration's ongoing massacre of the innocents in Yemen has failed to generate outrage and deep sorrow. This war began the last time Joseph Biden was in office. It must end now. 2 years in time, Yemen doesn't have. Sanctions and blockades are devastating warfare, cruelly leveraging hunger and possible famine as a tool of war. But the message Americans sent to governing bodies throughout the world was unmistakable. If you do not subordinate your country to serve our national interest, we will crush your children. Yemen hadn't always gotten this message. That will be the most expensive no vote you ever cast, was the U.S. ambassador's chilling response to Yemen. Today, children in Yemen are being starved by Saudi and Emirati monarchs. This painting concerned the death of one child. In Yemen, the United States, through its regional allies, could end up killing many hundreds of thousands more. Yemen's children cannot protect themselves. In the direst cases of severe acute malnutrition, they are too weak even to cry. We must not turn away. We must decry the terrible war and blockade. Doing so may help spare the lives of at least some of Yemen's children. The opportunity to resist this massacre of the innocents rests with us.
Questions and answers in Islamic upbringing.
I have a son. He's really fond of football, and he's so weak in his lesson courses. I really don't know what should I do.
Could you tell me when we have to start upbringing our kids, that is, from the very beginning of the birth?
I have a little son, and he's so disrespectful. I want to know how to treat him according to the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them.
Answering parents' questions in upbringing their children in an Islamic way.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran, for big and small. A way of life, a way of life, a way of life, a way of life. Islam is a way of life, a complete way.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. Salamun alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. You are listening to the program Islamic Upbringing, where we discuss the problems and questions parents have regarding Islamic upbringing of their children. The answers are mostly based on the book Children in the Quran and Sunnah, compiled by Ayatollah Rishahri. And in the studio with us is our guest speaker, Brother Miqdad, an Islamic researcher in the Hawza Ilmiya of Qom. Assalamu alaikum, Brother Miqdad. Thanks for coming to the program.
Wa alaikum salam, rahmatullah. The pleasure is all mine.
Continuing our discussion from previous episodes about alternatives to beating our children. So we remember from last episode that one of it is to remind a child of his position as the Quran has defined it, so that he would want to be good and behave well. Can you please list us for our parents the alternatives which they can use and implement for treating their misbehaving children?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. So we talked about role modeling some time ago in this show, and we had many episodes about this, that role modeling is perhaps one of the best ways to bring about this love and this attraction towards perfection in a child. Basically, you want a child to behave in a particular way. As long as they have a good role model, they'll be behaving according to that, and so their behavior will be exactly what you want, towards good, because they have a good role model. So a role model really helps towards inner change. Coming to things related to discipline self, so having said all of that, it's very important to realize that reward and punishment and discipline itself also has a place. It's not that Islam says completely no to any sort of discipline. We don't want to go towards this extreme either, right? Just like you have certain Western theory of parenting which completely remove all sorts of discipline and all sorts of reward and punishment, like the extreme levels of unparenting and unconditional love and those kind of things. No, Islam does have a place for reward and punishment, and it's actually, we do that all the time as parents. Your child does something good, or you want the child to do something, you bribe him with, what the wrong word to use, you attract him towards doing something good by promising him a sweet, for example, or a reward, and the opposite as well, by saying that you'll get punished if you don't do this. So there is a space. It's just knowing when to use it and how to use it, and for what purpose are we using. It's a very temporary thing, okay, but still necessary, because at times what happens is that to bring about inner change, we need to break a shackle, we need to break an obstacle, and to break this obstacle, you need the person to try at least once, right? Take the example of swimming, right? You want a child to learn how to swim. Once the child is in the water, then they'll just figure out themselves out, and you don't need any reward and punishment. But it's that jump into the water where a child's like, I don't want to go in the water. There you just need to use a bit of reward and punishment, control a very temporary moment of controlling a particular behavior. Okay, and once they're in the water, you know they'll have loads of fun, right? So it's just that moment you say, okay, you know what? If you jump in the water, I'll give you this amount of reward, or if you don't, then I'll give you this amount of punishment. Just to explain that reward and punishment has a place, because certain actions need to happen at a particular time, and so in that controlled environment, in that space of very short time, there's a need to use reward and punishment, and there's nothing wrong with that.
Okay, thank you very much. I'm going to ask you after the break to give us an example of when a child misbehaves and how we can use the reward and punishment system there. Stay tuned.
IRIB English Radio presents A Priceless Gift to Parents. Do you have problem with your kids?
I have two boys. One is 5-year-old and the other one is 3.5. And they constantly fight and wrestle with each other, and it often gets to a dangerous stage.
My 18-month-old daughter has learned to eat by herself, and she just refuses that I feed her. But usually, all the food basically goes everywhere except her mouth. So how can we allow this strife to happen for the purpose of freedom?
Don't worry. We're here to help.
For a child, the purpose of the food is only to feed. It's also for him to learn. It's also for him to explore and fulfill the need of curiosity, fulfill the need of freedom.
Islamic upbringing. Contact us. EnglishRadio@irib.ir.
You're back on IRIB English Radio, broadcasting from Iran. This is Islamic upbringing, and we're talking about alternatives to beating children when they misbehave. So you said that Islam does have the notion of reward and punishment when we are raising our children. I'm going to ask you for an example for when our child misbehaves and we want to implement this system to correct them.
Take example of a toddler, a 3-4-year-old, whom you've told that they shouldn't hit their little sister. Okay? They shouldn't pull their hair, and he does it once and he does it twice. And you've told him nicely, gently, you've explained to him, right? Then there's a need to take a further action to ensure that this doesn't happen, because it can actually become very dangerous. It's actually hindering any good relation with the sister, etc. So what you can do over here, for instance, is as long as you've told the child, and the child knows, and as you've satisfied all the other needs, it's not a moment where the child, for example, is very, very hungry or very, very tired, and they're misbehaving, they're pulling the hair of their sister because of these other needs. No, you've covered their physical needs, you've covered emotional needs, you've covered them, and they're in a state where they shouldn't be doing this, but they still do. Okay, you can take this child and very nicely, very respectful, say that I've told you not to do this, okay? I'm not happy with you. An alternative to hitting is showing disapproval of action. So this action that you do, I don't approve it. It makes me really, really unhappy with this. This particular action makes me unhappy. Not that you make me unhappy. Not that I don't like you. No, it's nothing to do with you. It's to do with this action. Okay, this action is very wrong. It's a wrong thing to do. It makes me very unhappy. Okay. When you do this, the child realizes, because obviously the child is attached to his parents, the child likes his parents, he realizes that this is something that makes my parents really unhappy. If it goes to a certain point, you can actually even like show a level of unhappiness. For example, for the next 5-10 minutes, you speak very firmly, You're not smiling too much because you're very unhappy. Okay, you're kind of very gently ignoring as well, just that they realize that there's something that I did was very wrong over here. At the beginning of this, at the beginning of the first or the second show, we talked about this hadith that says that this is hadith number 306, that a person complained to Imam al-Kadhim alayhi salam about his son, and Imam Kadhim told him do not beat him. And then he says something else. He says, just forsake him and do not prolong it. So just ignore your child for a bit, right? Show this disapproval, but don't prolong it. Don't make it like a whole day or even an hour, right? Depending on the child's age and ability to understand, make it for a short period of time that you've shown him that you're very unhappy about this particular action, right? This will then lead to a child remembering that this action is something that leads to disapproval of my parents, and therefore I shouldn't do it again.
And this goes all the way to children up to 12 years old. I mean, is it okay if a parent disconnects with their children, stops talking with them, for instance, for a whole day?
It shouldn't be prolonged to a whole day. And it shouldn't be done in a way that it then becomes a 10-year-old, a 12-year-old will actually not react very well to this. Like, I don't really care if it's taken as against a self-respect, right? It's usually used for early on age. When it comes to a 12-year-old child and above, this child actually requires more understanding. And you have to explain to him a bit more. This is where you talk about the consequences of the action, the real consequences, right? And this is where you have a conversation with a child, right? But even then, if it goes to an extent, you can use certain level of punishment, that things that the child likes, for example, to take those away for a very short period of time.
Okay, thanks. Let's go for a short break, and we'll be back for the rest of the discussion.
Ya muqiya al-khayrat, ya muqiya al-khayrat.
Imam Ali alayhi salam said, excessive blame causes the fire of obstinacy to flame.
You're back on IRIB English Radio, broadcasting from Iran. This is Islamic Upbringing. We're talking about alternatives to beating our children when they misbehave. So one thing that we said just before the break was the punishment and reward system was expressing or disapproval of what they are doing. What are other alternatives to beating our children?
Let me give another example. You've told a child many times not to drink their glass of milk, for instance, whilst running around. Okay? You know, sometimes some children, they like to do things very actively, full of energy children. They pick up their glass and they're running around whilst holding the glass. And you've told them once, twice, and they know not to do it. They know that they'll end up bad thing. This time they do it and it spills, right? You go, the floor all wet. It's all messy. It was juice. It's very sticky as well, right? Now, you can scream and hit and do all these kind of things. We said, don't do that, okay? Alternative over here is to bear the consequence. You explain to a child, look, we knew we were supposed to do this, right? This was a very bad thing to do, okay? For us to learn that we should, and for us to remember, because I'm sure you forgot, you were very happy about something or you were enjoying your moment, okay? So you forgot. Just that we remember next time, all of us remember that we shouldn't be running with our glass of milk, we'll have to bear the consequence of this. It means you clean up.
That's a very interesting way to put it, because most parents would put it as a punishment. But what you're doing here, the suggestion that you're making, is not to make it as a punishment, but as a lesson.
Exactly. And you actually help him as well. It's not like you do it and that's it. I'm very angry. I'm not talking to you. You go and clean up. No. We'll do it together. I want you to feel the pain of bearing the consequences of your negative actions. And this is a way to bring about a discipline, basically. The child learns that when I make mistakes, when I do things I wasn't supposed to do, when I do bad things, there's always consequences. And this time means that I have to be on the floor and wipe the floor and clean up everything I see. And what's very important here is that my parents haven't shown me that they don't like me or they hate me or that kind of stuff, okay? They're in my team, we're together. Just that I made a mistake, and actually even now that they have to suffer because of me as well in terms of cleaning up. So this is another alternative to punishment, is to bear the consequence of the action or bear the consequence of the bad thing that we do that we were not supposed to do.
And I like about it how the message here is that we're on the same team, we're together. You're not a parent who is talking from above, from a superior level. but a parent who's at the same level of the child. And like I said, you're a team, and that really helps in having children collaborate. We have less than a minute. What other alternatives can you suggest?
Sometimes you realize that there's two things over here. One is that sometimes you realize that a very good way to discipline is actually to ignore, right? To do taghaful. We have many hadith about taghaful. It means to just ignore, right? To show that you know what happened, right? And you ignore it. What happens is that the child many times misbehaves because he wants a reaction.
Wants attention.
He wants attention or wants a reaction. Wants to see what happens. When you ignore, then what happens? The child actually doesn't want to do it. Because in the first place, they didn't want to really want to do it. They were just looking for an attention. They were looking for a reaction from parents. They were looking for something to happen. They were in a mood that, you know, sometimes children are in a mood. They want to see a big scream. They want to see something coming up to
exciting.
A fire to come up, basically. Something exciting to happen. When you ignore it, it actually stops them from doing that bad thing, right? You're taghaful, you just ignore it. This is one situation of taghaful. Taghaful in other situations is also that when you ignore it, especially this is in older children now, when you ignore it, a child feels actually honored. It feels actually respected. Let's say I got caught, for example. I don't know, I wasn't supposed to watch TV, okay? I still switch on the TV, 10-year-old boy. She shows on TV, watches TV. Dad comes in and surprises. Oh my God, my dad just spot me watching TV. I wasn't supposed to. Dad comes in and says, "Salam, how are you? Are you okay?" And walks back out. Just ignores it. Pretending I didn't even see you watching TV. The child, what happens now, feels slightly embarrassed. Feels, on one side, feels respected that I didn't get told off or my dad didn't shout. And sometimes feels a bit shy and feels a bit embarrassed.
Feels like he let his parents down.
Exactly.
They expected more from him.
And he won't do it again. He will never disobey his parents in watching TV again. So this is one other way to do taghaful, basically. Not show any reaction or just ignore it.
And interestingly, that's not only for children. In university, those professors who saw children cheat in an exam but ignored it, In later exams, there was much less cheating in their classes because the children felt that they're letting him down. Thank you, Brother Miqdad. It's always a joy talking with you. And thanks, special thanks to our audience out there for whom we are here for. And we hope you enjoy these programs. If you missed our program, don't worry. You can always download an archive of this episode and all our previous episodes from our website. Simply visit www.parstoday.com. That's parstoday.com. And find our page on Call of Islam Radio. You can also email us at englishradio@irib.ir. That's englishradio@irib.ir. Until next episode, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Islam solves all of its problems. Allah leaves no stone unturned. Perfect with no flaws at all are the laws of Allah. A way of life, a way of life, a way of life, a way of life. Islam is a way of life. A complete way, it's a complete way.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave, 49 meters, 7,300 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Thank you.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.